open meeting policy is available by calling the station at 503-231-8032. Meetings will be held at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue in Portland unless otherwise noted. The Personnel Governance Committee will meet on Wednesday, January 15th at 5 p.m.
Join us on Tuesday, January 21st for Hindsight 2020, debriefing the last 3 years. A day of special programming looking back at the Trump regime, what happened, why, and the repercussions domestically and internationally. We'll focus on national policy, foreign policy, privacy and surveillance, policing, immigration, labor rights, confronting white nationalism, the environment, and much more. Again, that's Hindsight 2020, debriefing the last 3 years on Tuesday, January 21st from 8 a.m. to 8 p.m. here on your community radio, KBOO Portland.
You're listening to KBOO Portland 90.7 FM. The time is 9 a.m. It's time for Sojourner Truth.
Welcome to Sojourner Truth. Thank you for staying with us. This is your host, Margaret Prescott. On Tuesday, January 14th, the 7th Democratic Party presidential debate took place at Drake University in Des Moines, Iowa. Six presidential candidates faced off less than 3 weeks before the February 3rd Iowa caucuses, which will decide who will confront Donald Trump at the polls in November. At least it will be the first vote that we will see. The six candidates included Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders, Massachusetts Senator Elizabeth Warren, Minnesota Senator Amy Klobuchar, former Vice President Joe Biden, former South Bend, Indiana Mayor Pete Buttigieg, and wealthy businessman Tom Steyer. In total, there are 12 remaining Democratic presidential candidates. Not all of them made the stage. But hours before the debate, there were protests by immigrants' rights groups. Also, the Poor People's Campaign, a national call for moral revival, held a march at Drake University outside the forum calling for a full debate on poverty, and Black Lives Matter, who have been protesting, in particular Pete Buttigieg, were also there. Our panelists are Gwendolyn Zahara Simmons, Professor Emerita of African American Studies and Islamic Studies at the University of Florida. Bill Gallegos, a longtime Chicano liberation and environmental justice activist. Alan Minsky, Executive Director of Progressive Democrats of America. Alan was also the program director at KPFK Los Angeles from 2009 to 2018. Those are our panelists. Also joining us to talk about the protests that Black Lives Matter have been organizing against Pete Buttigieg, Emmanuel Kennedy, who is that is part of our Campaigners for Black Lives series. We live in a global world. We're all interrelated. So on Sojourner Truth, we work to bring directly to you news and views on local, national, and international policies and stories that affect us all. And we draw out how those of us most impacted, women, communities of color, and other communities are responding. We also discuss the interrelationship between art and politics. Now for our news headlines.
For Pacifica Radio, I'm Eileen Alfandari. The House is set to vote today to send the articles of impeachment against President Trump to the Senate for a landmark trial on charges of abuse of power and obstruction of Congress. Speaker Nancy Pelosi plans a morning announcement to name the House managers who will prosecute the case. At midday, the House will vote to send the articles to the Senate, and the managers will walk them across the Capitol. New details of President Trump's efforts on Ukraine emerged late yesterday, increasing pressure on senators to call witnesses in the trial. House investigators announced they were turning over a trove of new records of phone calls, text messages, and other information from Lev Parnas, an associate of Trump lawyer Rudy Giuliani. A man named Robert Hyde disparaged former fired U.S. ambassador to Ukraine Marie Yovanovitch in messages to Parnas. Hyde gave him updates on her location and cell phone use, appearing to show she was under surveillance. Hyde, who's now running for Congress from Connecticut, says, quote, "We have a person inside." Hyde at one point texted Parnas that they're willing to help if we, you, would like a price, and, quote, "Guess you can do anything in Ukraine with money," is what I was told. Parnas texted back, LOL. Yovanovitch quickly left Ukraine in April after she was told her security was at risk. Impeachment, the threat of war with Iran, health care, free higher education, and climate change all were topics at last night's Democratic debate. The tensest moment had to do with the apparent strained relations between the two most progressive candidates in the race, Senators Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren. Sanders repeated his denial that he had told Warren in a conversation 2 years ago that a woman couldn't be elected president.
Anybody knows me knows that it's incomprehensible that I would think that a woman could not be president of the United States. Go to YouTube today. There's a video of me 30 years ago talking about how a woman could become president of the United States. In 2015, I deferred, in fact, to Senator Warren. There was a movement to draft Senator Warren to run for president. And you know what? I said, stayed back. Senator Warren decided not to run, and I did run afterwards.
Sanders added that Hillary Clinton had won 3 million more popular votes than Donald Trump in the 2016 presidential contest. When the CNN moderator turned to Warren and asked how she had reacted to Sanders' reported comment 2 years ago, Warren said she disagreed with it and then pivoted to the question of the electability of women.
Bernie is my friend, and I am not here to try to fight with Bernie. But look, this question about whether or not a woman can be president has been raised, and it's time for us to attack it head on. And I think the best way to talk about who can win is by looking at people's winning record. So, can a woman beat Donald Trump? Look at the men on this stage. Collectively, they have lost 10 elections. The only people on this stage who have won every single election that they've been in are the women, Amy and me.
A reference to Senator Amy Klobuchar. After the debate was over, Sanders approached Warren, hand outstretched to shake hers. Warren kept her hands to her chest. The two had a brief off-mic exchange and then turned away. There was a sharp divide on the issue of whether the U.S. should continue its military presence in the Mideast and beyond. Sanders and Warren said the U.S. should withdraw its troops from the region. Former Vice President Joe Biden disagreed.
I would leave troops in the Middle East in terms of patrolling the Gulf, where we are now, small numbers of troops. And I think it's a mistake to pull out the small number of troops that are there now to deal with ISIS.
Virginia Democratic Senator Tim Kaine says he has at least 51 votes to support a resolution asserting that President Trump must seek approval from Congress before engaging in further military action against Iran. The resolution is co-sponsored by Republicans Mike Lee of Utah and Rand Paul of Kentucky. Kaine said Todd Young of Indiana and Susan Collins of Maine have said they'll support it too. Senate Democratic Minority Leader Chuck Schumer said the vote could come as soon as next week.
Senate will soon consider Senator Kaine's war power resolution, which would prevent further escalation of hostilities with Iran. And we believe we'll get 51 votes.
The Democratic-controlled House passed a separate war powers resolution last week. Iran's president warned that European soldiers in the Mideast could be in danger after three nations challenged Iran over breaking the limits of the nuclear deal. Germany, France, and Britain triggered the accord's dispute mechanism to force Iran into discussions. Their actions started the clock on a process that could result in the snapback of United Nations and European Union sanctions on Iran. I'm Eileen Alfandari for Pacifica Radio.
And this is Margaret Prescott, host of Sojourner Truth. And we're going to spend the hour having some analysis and varying views on the presidential debate that was held at Drake University in Des Moines, Iowa, last evening. On Tuesday evening, six presidential candidates facing off: Bernie Sanders, Elizabeth Warren, Amy Klobuchar, Joe Biden, Mayor Pete Buttigieg, and Tom Steyer. The debate, which kicked off focusing on foreign policy, was moderated by CNN's Wolf Blitzer and Abby Phillip, as well as Brianne Fenensteel of the Des Moines Register. Later on during the debate, the candidates discuss health care, international trade, and climate change. Now, according to CNN, Warren had the most speaking time during Tuesday's debate, with nearly 19 minutes, followed closely by Bernie Sanders and Amy Klobuchar at nearly 18 minutes. Also, yesterday, Donald Trump held a rally in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, around the same time as the debate, taking hits at leading Democratic candidates Biden, Sanders, and Warren. And there he also defended yet again his decision to assassinate Iranian General Soleimani, and he slammed the Democrats as weak. There were also protests that took place outside of the debate, one by the Poor People's Campaign, that have been calling for a full debate on poverty, which has not happened. Indeed, poverty was barely mentioned. Pete Buttigieg did mention the Poor People's Campaign protest and poverty, but no one else really picked up on it. Also, Black Lives Matter, they basically have been on the trail of Pete Buttigieg protesting his policies around policing and race in South Bend, Indiana. The Poor People's Campaign, they held up signs that read "Housing for All" and "Living Wages Now." What we're going to do before we welcome our panelists, we're going to go to a roundup that was put together with the Washington Post on the key areas that last night, a clip on that: foreign policy, trade, electability, also healthcare is part of it. Let's go to that clip now.
I said 13 years ago it was a mistake to give the president the authority to go to war if, in fact, he couldn't get inspectors into Iraq to stop what thought to be the attempt to get a nuclear weapon.
But the war in Iraq turned out to be the worst foreign policy blunder in the modern history of this country. Joe and I listened to what Dick Cheney and George Bush and Rumsfeld had to say. I thought they were lying. I didn't believe them for a moment. I took to the floor. I did everything I could to prevent that war.
Donald Trump is taking us pell-mell toward another war. We have a very important resolution. We just found out today that four Republicans are joining Democrats to go to him and say, you must have an authorization of military force if you're going to go to war with Iran.
If you've been listening to this, what we are hearing is 20 years of mistakes by the American government in the Middle East.
We can continue to remain engaged without having an endless commitment of ground troops. That's but true. What's going on right now is the president's actually sending more.
The American people are sick and tired of endless wars which have cost us trillions of dollars.
And with regard to this idea that we can walk away and not have any troops anywhere, including special forces, there's no way you negotiate or been able to negotiate with terrorists.
This has got to stop. It's not enough to say someday we're going to get out. No one on the ground, none of our military, can describe what the conditions are for getting out. It's time to get our combat troops home. We need a coherent trade policy. We need a policy that actually helps our workers, our farmers. We need them at the table.
It is not so easy to put together new trade legislation. If this is passed, I think it will set us back a number of years. Bottom line here is, I am sick and tired of trade agreements negotiated by the CEOs of large corporations.
Senator Klobuchar, I'd like to bring.
When I support the USMCA, I am glad that these improvements were made.
Thank
because
you.
I think we need a big trading block with North America to take on China.
I remember when they came around in the 90s selling trade deals, telling us, don't worry about your slice of the pie. the pie will get so much bigger that everyone will be better off. And that promise was broken.
There will be no trade agreement signed in my administration without environmentalists and labor at the table. And there will be no trade agreement until we invest more in American workers.
And let me be very clear. If any of the women on this stage or any of the men on this stage win the nomination, I hope that's not the case. I hope it's me. But if they do, I will do everything in my power to make sure that they are elected in order to defeat the most dangerous president in the history of our country.
Bernie is my friend, and I am not here to try to fight with Bernie. But look, this question about whether or not a woman can be president has been raised, and it's time for us to attack it head on. And I think the best way to talk about who can win is by looking at people's winning record. So, can a woman beat Donald Trump? Look at the men on this stage. Collectively, they have lost 10 elections. The only people on this stage who have won every single election that they've been in are the women, Amy and me.
Medicare for All, which will guarantee comprehensive health care to every man, woman, and child, will cost substantially less than the status quo. Medicare for All will end the absurdity of the United States paying by far the highest prices in the world for prescription drugs and health care in general.
I think we need to be candid with voters. I think we have to tell them what we're going to do and what it's going to cost. And a 4% tax on income over $24,000 doesn't even come close to paying for between 30 and some estimates as high as $40 trillion over 10 years.
What Joe forgets to say is when you leave the current system as it is, what you are talking about are workers paying, on average, 20% of their incomes for health care. That is insane.
The real debate we should be having is how do we make it easier for people to get coverage for addiction and mental health? I have a plan for that. And then finally, what should we do about long-term care, the elephant that doesn't even fit in this room?
Here, but let's keep in mind, when we come to a general election, we Democrats may argue among each other about the best way to do health care, but we're going to be up against a Republican incumbent who has cut health care for millions of people and is still trying to do that. I'll take our side of the argument any day.
All righty. So we're going to start off actually in a critique mode, and we'll start with Gwendolyn Zohara Simmons, Professor Emerita of African American Studies and Islamic Studies at the University of Florida. And Zohara, as I call her, was also active in the civil rights era as a member of the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee, remaining very, very politically active and engaged today. Zohara Simmons, welcome back.
Is there a particular question, or do you just...
Well, I'm just welcoming you right now, and then I'll ask your question, right? And what I want to start with, actually, is what, and I'll ask this of you and the other panelists, what do you think was missing? What do you think was left out? What wasn't covered? And were there any surprises? I know there's a lot of analysis of who was stronger, who was the winner, and why. We'll get to that later in the show, but let's start now with what you think was missing, what was left out.
Well, you know, I really missed the voices of Kamala Harris as well as Booker and Yang. I mean, I think the three of them brought very, very important questions and comments to the debate. And Julian Castro. So it was a very different debate, I think, with none of the people of color engaged. I think that while the issue of poverty and race, there weren't specific questions related to that. Warren and Sanders constantly address the dire situation that many Americans are in as a result of unemployment or underemployment, and they often tie it to health care. So I think this is very important, and I'm glad they continue to hammer on that. in the face of the mainstream media constantly talking about how good the economy is and never mentioning the fact that I think it's possibly something like 40% of people are living paycheck to paycheck, if they even have a paycheck. So I think, you know, I'm very glad to have Bernie and Warren on the stage bringing us back to some reality around those issues.
Right. And Bill Gallegos, I mean, Julian Castro also not there. Notable. Nothing on immigration, no questions on immigration at all. And Bill Gallegos, by the way, is a longtime Chicano liberation and environmental justice activist. And welcome, Bill. Welcome to you. And again, you tell us, what do you think was missing, and were there any surprises?
Well, good morning, Martha. Thank you. Yes, I agree with Professor Simmons. I think there were not voices that really raised the question of racism, racial inequality, the rise of racism and racist attacks on our community, how all of the issues that they discussed, war and peace, health care, the economy, climate change, had a hugely disproportionate impact on oppressed communities of color. So to me, that was a notable absence in this debate and needs to be really elevated, especially from folks that I think can be influenced to really raise this issue, and that's Senator Sanders and Senator Warren. I also feel, you know, it's true that the fact that we have children are dying at the border, they're in cages, we have hundreds of thousands of people locked up. We're talking about a massive relocation of people to Honduras and Guatemala, the militarization of the border. That was absent from the conversation. Senator Sanders, in his closing argument, raised the question of immigration reform, but it was really notable by its absence, especially since that's such a centerpiece of the Trump candidacy. Stiers talked about the economy, but from the standpoint of appealing to the racism of his base, it has been immigration. And it was interesting that throughout the debate, one of the main and consistent commercials was for E-Verify, talking about the danger of illegal aliens taking our job. Mm. So it was just, it was really a notable question that was not part of that debate. It needs to be made a part of future debates.
Right, and Alan Minsky, Executive Director of the Progressive Democrats of America, also served as Program Director at the Pacifica Station, KPFK, Los Angeles, from 2009 to 2018. And what do you think was left out or perhaps not emphasized enough, and were there any surprises for you?
Sadly, no surprises. I would say that, in fact, it was a very flat debate, and we can talk more about that as we go through the hour. As you know, Margaret, I've written two articles now in the past year for The Nation about the unwillingness of the Democratic National Committee, the mainstream of the Democratic Party, and the mainstream media to address poverty issues. So this was the seventh consecutive debate in which there has been no question whatsoever about poverty, whether it's framed through the housing crisis or the fact of enduring entrenched poverty that affects basically half the population in the country. The subject comes up implicitly in much of what Warren and Sanders say, but there was very little emphasis from them. And Mayor Pete did cite for the second straight time the existence of poverty in the United States of America. But without the moderators asking focused questions, the subject doesn't get focused upon. And that's my main critique of this. And it goes to a lot of what Bill is saying also, that this is about Iowa. It's being held in Iowa. Amy Klobuchar is only on the stage. She would in no way qualify for any stage except for the fact that she has numbers that are relatively high in the state of Iowa. Her whole campaign is built around the fact that she's from the neighboring state of Minnesota, which is, you know, why she's still up there. And when you have a debate that focuses on Iowa issues, then you see this excuse to not raise the issues that that Bill is emphasizing, and so many of the other issues around racism and what a cornerstone they are of the Trump administration and will be of the Trump campaign. And so I think we have to look not only at the failures of the moderators, the imbalanced questions from CNN, but also this incredibly imbalanced electoral primary caucus system we have in the United States that places Iowa, to say it's at a heightened importance in the process, cannot be overstated. And of course, we accept it because we've always lived with it, but it's ridiculous and it's wrong.
Yeah, meanwhile, Trump is in Milwaukee, you know, whipping up all of this stuff. What I'd like to do is to bring in Emmanuel Kennedy, who is a member of Black Lives Matter in South Bend, Indiana, a doctoral student of sociology at the University of Notre Dame. But prior to that, a couple of clips related to the protests. One, you'll hear the Reverend Liz Theo Harris, one of the joint coordinators of the Poor People's Campaign, a short clip from her, but then, which may be surprising to some, is a clip of Tom Steyer being at the Greenleaf Christian Church in North Carolina, answering some questions on race and poverty.
As we build power to change the narrative, to impact elections, and to push all of our candidates to come forward with real answers, real solutions, listen to the people, because we actually have many of these solutions, and enact them. And we will keep the pressure up.
Some churchgoers here in the state had a rather different experience than usual this morning, worshiping alongside a presidential candidate. Hannah Jeffries attended the service today. And Hannah, what's a presidential candidate doing here in the East?
Matthew, Tom Steyer is an environmental activist who has pushed proposals on immigration, combating climate change, and historically Black colleges and universities. But today, he was here to answer questions from people directly impacted by what he calls fundamental racism and poverty. Steyer attended Greenleaf Christian Church in Goldsboro this morning. The church says Steyer is one of several candidates whom accepted the invitation organized by Bishop J. Barber II. The forum is no way indicated an endorsement.
All righty, and the forum is no way an endorsement of Steyer, but that clearly didn't happen. That church service didn't happen yesterday, but it did raise some eyebrows, and also Pete Buttigieg had also gone to that church. So bringing into the discussion then, Emmanuel Kennedy, you all have been Black Lives Matter, meaning have been on the case of Pete Buttigieg, and you were part of, I suppose, several protests that were happening outside the Iowa debate. So Emmanuel, welcome. First of all,
thank you. Good morning.
Yeah, and we also want to thank Black Lives Matter LA. We partner with them for our weekly Campaigners for Black Lives series. So tell us why this focus on Pete Buttigieg and what happened outside the debate last night.
Yeah, sure. Well, Pete Buttigieg was our mayor for the last 8 years in South Bend, and he's going across the country talking about how he has done a wonderful job revitalizing the community of South Bend. And we in Black Lives Matter feel, with a lot of the voices of people in the community, that his story is not as truthful as everybody should know. So if he's promoting a certain message, we need to provide what the true facts are. And so our mission in Iowa was one of education. Iowa is a state that is 90% white. And so that means there isn't a lot of Black folks there that may be interested in coming to some of these debates, or even within Iowa itself, people don't know about the experiences of what's happening on other sides of the country. South Bend is a city of almost a quarter Black, and our job was just to educate the citizens of Iowa about issues of some of their other citizens across the country.
Right. And thank you for that. And do you, you know, for people, Emmanuel, who are saying, well, isn't it most important now to defeat Donald Trump? And how does the strategy of going after Pete Buttigieg accomplish that? Do you get questions like that? And can you tell us anything? The Poor People's Campaign, they were out there protesting. Right. Some immigrants' rights groups were out there protesting for obvious reasons. So there was a real mix of folks out there.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So for us, I mean, the true goal at the end of the day, I think for a lot of us, is to beat Donald Trump. But at the same time, I think that's a deflection from what exactly is happening. So when Mayor Pete Buttigieg, when he critiques the Black Lives Matter our strategies or whatever, he says that this is the way politics are today. Now, he gives away his game when he says this is politics, because Black Lives Matter is fully committed to the people. Now, when people in South Bend are being shot by police officers, when there isn't any police accountability, when there's unequal giving up of contracts to minorities, when there's lead in the air and in the soil because of a 1,000 Houses and a 1,000 Days initiative, that's not about politics to the people in South Bend. That's about people. And so by us going after Pete in the way we are reminding us that we're reminding the nation that we need a commander-in-chief that is not only about politics, but is first and foremost about people.
Right. Well, you make a very solid case there, Emmanuel. Kennedy with Black Lives Matter in South Bend, Indiana. What we're going to do now, please, our panelists, stay with us, because the next round we're going to go into who you thought were strongest. I mean, there's a lot of debate about who the winners were and who the losers are, and we'll get into some of the policy kinds of issues as well. But we're going to take a short station break. We're going to do our weekly Earth Minute, and then we'll get back to analysis of the debate. We'll be right back.
JetBlue recently announced that all of its domestic flights will be carbon neutral starting this
year. You're listening to KBOO Portland, 90.7 FM. The time is 9:30 a.m. Stay tuned. At the top of the hour at 10 a.m., we have flashpoints. Now back to more Sojourner's Truth.
Beginning by the indigenous and other peoples whose forests it targets. There is no actual science behind forest carbon offsets. Carbon stored by forests cannot offset the massive quantities of carbon permanently released from burning highly concentrated fossil fuels. Even in the 50s, when there were over 2 billion hectares more of forest and we were burning a lot less carbon, emissions were still noticeably starting to concentrate. Greenwashing an industry as damaging to the climate as air travel lulls us into the magical idea that we can solve the climate crisis without really changing anything. We can just take over someone else's forests to cover up our climate sins. But others believe that climate action must be both effective and just. For the Earth Minute and the Sojourner Truth Show, this is Ann Peterman from Global Justice Ecology Project.
All righty, and that's The Roots, Ain't Gonna Let Nobody Turn Me Around. This is Margaret Prescott, host of Sojourner Truth. If you're a member of Facebook, you can like and friend us on Facebook. Our handle on Instagram and Twitter, at SoTrueRadio. And we're also on SoundCloud around the country and also around the world. And in the Sojourner Truth tradition, we would like to give a shout out to our SoundCloud listeners in South Bend, Indiana. South Bend, Indiana today. And internationally, we'd like to give a shout out to our SoundCloud listeners in Argentina. We are having analysis and some discussion about the Democratic presidential debate that took place on last evening, Tuesday evening. And our panelists are Gwendolyn Sohara Simmons, Bill Gallegos, Alan Minsky, and also weighing in on the protesting Black Lives Matter has been doing, Emmanuel Carnegie. What we're going to do now with this particular round, I would like to actually play this clip about how Democrats are saying that they will beat, how the candidates are saying they will beat Donald Trump, and then have our panelists weigh in.
Look, I've been the object of his affection now more than anybody else in this state.
I've taken all the hits he can deliver, and I'm getting better in the polls, my going up. And by the way, I have overwhelming support from the African-American community, overwhelming, more than everybody else in this operation.
I am going to be able to stand across from him on that debate stage and say to my friends in Iowa, the Midwest is not flyover country for me. I live here. I'm going to be able to look at him and say, you've treated these workers and farmers like poker chips. For me, these are my friends and these are my neighbors.
I'm ready to take on Donald Trump because when he gets to the tough talk and the chest thumping, he'll have to stand next to an American war veteran and explain how he pretended bone spurs made him ineligible to serve. And if he keeps trying to use religion, if a guy like Donald Trump keeps trying to use religion to somehow recruit Christianity into the GOP, I will be standing there not afraid to talk about a different way to answer the call of faith and insist that God does not belong to a political party.
We have a chance to unite. Unite as Democrats, but also with independents and Republicans who are sick of living in a country that's working great for the politicians that are taking the money. It's working great for the lobbyists. It's working great for the corporate executives. It's just not working for everyone else. I'm building the grassroots movement, leading the fight. We're going to make this America work for everyone else. That is how we're going to beat Donald Trump.
I started a business by myself in one room. I didn't inherit a penny from my parents. I spent 30 years building that business into a multi-billion dollar international business. Then I walked away from it and took the giving pledge and started organizing coalitions of ordinary Americans to take on unchecked corporate power. But whoever is going to beat Mr. Trump is going to have to beat him on the economy, and I have the experience and the expertise to show that he's a fake there and a fraud.
My democratic socialism says healthcare is a human right. We're going to raise the minimum wage to $15 an hour. We're going to make public colleges and universities tuition free. We're going to have a Green New Deal and create up to $20 million saving the planet for our children and our grandchildren. We are going to take on the greed and corruption of the pharmaceutical industry and the insurance company. That is what democratic socialism is about, and that will win this election.
Well, Bernie certainly didn't back down. There he is defending democratic socialism, saying it could win in the United States. I'll put now our panelists on the spot, starting with you, Gwendolyn Zahara Simmons. Was there any particular candidate that you think stood out if you were going to choose a winner? And any you thought didn't do too well or went into the loser column? Do you feel you're able to do that, or are there several that fit perhaps both, both of those, winners or losers? And also say why, by the way. Let's start with you.
Okay, thank you so much. I clearly am in the Bernie Sanders camp. I think that
You may be in the Bernie Sanders camp, but do you think he stood out? He was the winner last night.
Well, as your earlier guest said, it was the debate was a bit flat, and I certainly think that there were winners and losers. I would not say that Bernie was the standout.
Okay.
And I think that certainly at some of his positions that he took very strongly rose to the top. But if you're talking about an overall, I would lump, except for the dust-up, you know, between Warren and Sanders, I would say that their message is the stronger message for the majority of the people in this country. I think Biden did quite poorly. I would rank him, even though, you know, he did better than he did in the earlier debates. I still think that his positions are weak. So I would elevate both Sanders and Warren at the top in terms of the issues and how they presented them.
So, Zahara, let me ask you this, though. I mean, Biden made much of his support in the black community, and that is absolutely true, except for young black people, 35 and younger. Sanders is actually ahead of Biden. Do you think that what happened last night in this debate changes that in any way, or do you think the black voters who've been polled 35 and above are, you know, going to shift away from Biden given last night's performance? Zahara?
I'm very afraid that they're not, because clearly he was so poor in the earlier debates, and that didn't seem to move the needle in the 35 and up. I think, you know, it's unfortunate, because I just think he is really bad news for black people's interest. And it's I'm very sad. And in many ways, the way that all of the candidates, except for Kamala in the very first debate, don't really lay a glove on him. And I understand there's this whole fear of amongst the Democratic candidates, if we, you know, are too hard on anybody, it's going to hurt the candidate in the general. And so in many ways, I think their hands are tied. I'm just shocked that nobody brings up the Anita Hill issue, so many of the things that Biden did that are really terrible as far as not only black people, but progressives, period. So I'm very worried that he's going to still be riding Obama's coattail for the black community.
Right. And Bill Gallegos, winners, losers, why?
Well, I think it was interesting, Margaret, because I think you had three candidates who consistently echoed the theme of, we have to take this country back from the rich. We have to tax the rich. We have to take the politics away from the rich on all issues, on health care, on climate. And that was, of course, Senator Sanders, Senator Warren, and surprisingly, Tom Steyer.
Yeah, that was a surprise.
So that was a consistent theme from those three. And I think that was very, very strong. You know, it's the old Main Street versus Wall Street piece. But I think they, you know, that was a consistent theme from all of them. And then the neoliberal point of view, the old Clinton politics, you know, let's just tweak the system but pretty much leave it in place with everyone else. And I thought of the other candidates that representing that point of view. I thought Klobuchar was the strongest, most assertive, the clearest for those kinds of politics. You know, we'll leave combat troops and we'll leave our special forces in the Middle East, and we'll just tweak the healthcare system and support trade, these trade deals. So I felt like there was those two wings right there of the politics right now that are being fought out. And I think it's really, really important that we mobilize an inside-outside strategy. So these debates should happen. I think we need to push Senator Sanders, Senator Warren, and Steyer to really get deep into the question of racial inequality, immigration, and some of the other issues that are really critical, I think, for the progressive social movements. But I think what Emmanuel and others have done, we need to give none of them any rest. There needs to be continual action by the social movements. We shouldn't just be passive. You know, we should continue to put pressure on them on all of these issues on the outside as well. So I think this was, you know, I think Biden, to me, was terrible. I think he is not their best representative of the neoliberal point of view. I think Buttigieg and Klobuchar better represented that point of view, a view which I don't agree with, but I do think they represented it better. Biden, he sold a flat out lie. His numbers are going down; they're not going up. So when he's talking about, you know, I got all the black folks and my numbers are going up, I don't know if he's going to be able to hold on to that constituency. One, and two, I think he's going to continue to have significant problems in this campaign as it moves forward.
Yeah, and Alan Minsky on this, a couple of things to underscore. One of the analysts in the mainstream press, I think might have been the Washington Post, said that the fact that the flap between Warren and Sanders really put forward Biden served more in the interests of Biden, number one. And Steyer seems to be putting himself forward as the environmentalist, the candidate most, the number one priority, the environment. And also, he was the one that perhaps talked more than others about, you know, race. And, you know, then he was at Reverend Barber's church, et cetera. So it does seem as though he is trying to distinguish himself in that way, though, of course, he's a major billionaire, I think. And Alan, also, before you comment, I just wanted to share a comment from a white man, farmer in Southern Illinois, rural Southern Illinois, and this is what he had to say about it, about the debate. He says, Warren has improved. Klobuchar was strong and steady. Biden, dodderingly unimpressive. But this same man also said that, I can't remember if it was a platypus or something like that, could be on the Democratic ticket, and he was going to vote on the Democratic ticket because the priority was defeating Donald Trump. So, Alan, your thoughts on winners, losers, and why?
Well, okay, obviously, it's a very peculiar moment, very peculiar debate, in part because now we can anticipate for the almost immediately starting this morning, the debate is going to be not on the headlines. The Democratic race is probably not going to be on the headlines. And I think that's somewhat of a blessing to the two progressives in the race, because I don't think there's any way to slice or dice what's transpired between Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren over the past now about 72 hours and think that it's going to help their combined numbers. And in that sense, I think that that weighed on the whole debate. It was further exacerbated by a post-debate controversy in which, when Warren walked up to Bernie Sanders outstretched his hand for a handshake, the sort of conventional just shaking of hands, and Warren seemed to rebuff that, it's rather clear from the videotape. And I think that that does help primarily Joe Biden. So I concur with that Washington Post analyst. In that sense, I think the beneficiary of this whole drama that transpired last night would be Joe Biden. Pete Buttigieg, people have been speaking about the top four candidates. Buttigieg was never really in the top four on the national polls.
That's true.
His efforts in Iowa and New Hampshire. So it's really a top three. And Biden is sort of floating above the fray. Nobody expects him to make any kind of creative contribution to public policy suggestions. And here's what, and I agree entirely about him being a throwback politician, a nightmare politician. These are ancient, 1980s, 1990s centrist Democratic positions he stands for. I think they'd be terrible for the country, terrible for the Democratic Party. It would serve the interests of the basically ascendant far right, because if the Democratic Party is non-responsive to the needs of the masses of people, we see around the world how this plays into the hands of populist right-wing demagogues like Donald Trump in America. And okay, now obviously we'll do everything we can to prevent that outcome, even if, you know, unfortunately Joe Biden ends up being the Democratic nominee and the president. But here's the frightening thing about Biden. If you look at, and there's some symmetry to this, and this is a petty analysis, but these kind of things maybe have some resonance and ways to think about Joe Biden. In 1980 and 2000, the person who won the presidency was a sort of charming, doddering, semi-coherent, making all sorts of verbal gaffes type of character, Ronald Reagan and then George W. Bush. Joe Biden, and I think Biden's handlers, even see that he can be in that kind of mold. And as such, he is such an empty suit. Nobody expects anything out of him. He's affable, much as the way people felt Reagan was and George W. Bush's. And just sort of final, to put this thing on the cherry on the top of this absurd Sunday of thought I'm putting forward here around Joe Biden, is that he is really a conservative. That's what he is, like Reagan, like Bush. Well, Reagan, in a sense, was a radical conservative, but he represents conservatism. He wants to conserve the contemporary status quo. And he's now the empty suit that's out in front of that.
Right. And Emmanuel, I'm looking at the clock here. We don't have a lot of time left. And I do want our panelists to also weigh in on any of the policy issues that stood out. But just in terms of this round, I know you were on to talk about something else, but do you have a quick thought on any winner or a loser from the debate?
Yeah, I mean, I can only comment on the commentary that I saw after the debate, the closing remarks, and kind of the commentary I saw this morning. But for me, it's interesting that we focused on the melodrama that has been happening. And to me, that tells me that we didn't learn anything new from this debate, and therefore the needle hasn't shifted as much. So I think most people know what the candidates are about now, and right now it's just trying to pick which flavor they want.
Right. And Zahara, then, in this round, we literally have like about 9 minutes or so on this, on the policy issues, because, foreign policy, a lot on Iraq, trade, healthcare, electability. There was an interesting discussion, too, about child care. And in that discussion, by the way, nobody mentioned that mothers should have the right to raise their own children. It was like you have the baby, and what is supposed to happen is you're to farm that baby out to be cared by somebody else, and that's always annoying to me, because I do think that mothers should have the right to take care of their own children. And in fact, the research has shown that for infants, especially children 3 and under, they really need that kind of connection with a primary caregiver for their ongoing development. So it just seems as though get the kids out of the way so you could really go do the real thing, which is maybe a job at McDonald's or have a career in IT or some such. But just on the policy issues, sorry, I had to throw that one in there, the policy issues is where really and final thoughts on all this, Gwendolyn Zahara Simmons.
Well, on regarding foreign policy and the never-ending wars in the Middle East and all, I think that, again, we have a real divide between Sanders and Warren and Klobuchar and Biden up around the troops and keeping troops. And, I think at one point Biden said, if you think we're going to take our troops out of from all over the world, you must be crazy. I mean, I'm certainly paraphrasing. So the whole issue of how much of our money, taxpayer dollars, go into holding, keeping the empire with our troops scattered all over the world, even though they didn't get into that, I think that it's clear that the Sanders and Warren wing are for reducing the amounts of money that go into the military budget. And so this, to me, is very, very important. I also, the Green New Deal and climate change issues, of course, Steyer is very strong on those. And everybody sort of mouths it, but I'm so happy that Bernie comes out very clearly in support of the Green New Deal, which would provide jobs as well as address the whole issue of climate crisis.
Yeah, by the way, Zahara, there's a Green New Deal coming out of Europe, and that Green New Deal coming out of Europe includes a call for a care income, for an income for people for caring for children, elderly people, people with disabilities, and people caring for the environment. And they see this as an environmental, it really is a fusion kind of demand. And I, for one, would like to see something like that in the Green New Deal in the U.S. Yeah,
I would love to see that. We don't even have, in many places, including at a place like the University of Florida, paid maternity leave.
Yeah.
Much less you being able to stay home until your child is 3 or 4 years old, as you can in many of our European countries, and get monies to support you and your family.
Right.
So we are so behind.
We certainly are.
Country. on social justice issues.
Okay, so Bill Gallegos on policy and any final thoughts from you?
Well, I think, you know, it was on the policy questions, I think the idea that we have to really tax the rich, take power away from the rich, use the power of the federal government to immediately begin a question of redistributing the wealth through health care, education, social services. And also, I think, on the international question, where both Senator Sanders, Senator Warren, and Tom Steyer all said that there should be a significant cut in the military budget, a focus on diplomacy, that they would restore the Iran nuclear deal in coordination with allies. I think those were really important shifts. And on climate change, I would encourage people to look at Senator Sanders' program on climate and the environment. It is by far the strongest, and it has a significant internationalist component that says the United States has a responsibility to provide resources to the global south to affect their global transition to clean energy, that it is the responsibility of the countries that have created the problem to support those countries that did not. I think that's a huge, huge issue that really needs to be elevated in all of the discussions about presidential politics.
Right, and Alan Minsky, you know, I'll just have to say, by the way, the media, they were really cruising for a bruising. They were really hoping of this big thing between Warren and Sanders. I mean, they got some of it, but I don't think to the degree that they did. But I'll have to say, this business about you elect somebody because they're a woman, I don't buy it. We saw Golda Meir in Israel. We saw what she stood for. We saw Theresa May. And, you know, it's and as Bernie said back in the day, it's a question of what you stand for. And I think that also reflects perhaps why people, even the black people, are not necessarily running after somebody because they're black, or women running after somebody because they're a woman, but basically what they stand for. But just your final thoughts on all of this. Anything on policy and a quick final thought?
Well, on policy, I just want to say that I do think Elizabeth Warren has sort of stepped back, and I think this has been true from a little bit of a shift in her policy around Medicare for All. As people know, she's now saying that she wouldn't try to implement this until the third year of her presidency, making it seem like a deprioritization compared to previously. So notably, Bernie was the person who was center stage defending Medicare for All in this debate. And I just want to say this, while I think he stands for that, and it's the best healthcare policy by far that he has, I also agree with Bill Gallegos again about how strong Bernie's Green New Deal is. It, by the way, has a strong, very strong component about a federal jobs guarantee right at the heart of his Green New Deal policy, so that very much in its core addresses poverty issues as well and employment issues. But I do have to say this about Bernie. When they're talking to him about the cost of Medicare for All, so again, there are defenders of Medicare for All out there, maybe even people who are close to any of the campaigns who support Medicare for All, most notably Bernie's, he really just needs to say, Canada affords this. How can Canada afford this? And the United States can't afford this.
Yeah,
clearly,
really.
It is affordable. All these other countries afford it.
Barbados affords it, okay?
Yeah. Anyway, that's, yeah. But again, and in sum, I think it was a forgettable debate. Unfortunately, Iowa is going to be center stage over the next 19 days in terms of this race. And those are my thoughts on this.
All righty.
Great panel, Margaret.
Yeah, thank you. And thank all of you for participating in it. One thing that we all have to look at, though, is turnout. Because without turnout, whoever the candidate is, and hopefully people will just go out and vote and not sit this one out. A very quick breaking news. Nancy Pelosi has just named the lawmakers who will serve as managers in the impeachment trial. That's Adam Schiff, Jerry Nadler, Hakeem Jeffries, Val Demings, Zoe Lofgren, Jason Crow, Sylvia Garcia, and the House is set to vote this afternoon on a resolution to formally appoint the managers. But we are out of time. I want to thank our panelists, participants today. Today's show produced by me. That's Margaret Prescott. I'd like to thank our Sojourner Truth team, our engineer, Lizette Tapia, our assistant producer, Romero Funes. If you'd like a copy of today's show, please contact the Pacifica Radio Archives at 1-800-735-0230.
tomorrow, go online to PacificaRadioArchives.org. By the way, tomorrow on Sojourner Truth, in addition to our Earth Watch, we're going to be getting some analysis of what the heck happened in the UK with the huge debate of the Labour Party. There are their lessons for us in the upcoming 2020 election. Thank you for listening. This is your host, Margaret Prescott.
There's a better world to come in, don't you see?
You're listening to KBOO Portland, 90.7 FM. The time is 9:58 a.m. Next up, we have Flashpoints.
I may not get there with you, but I want you to know tonight that we as a people will get to the promised land.
Hi, I'm Shahid Hamid, KBOO board member. Join the World Arts Foundation and KBOO Radio as we pay homage to the late Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. It's the 35th anniversary of Keep Alive the Dream, Monday, January the 20th, from 11 to 6:30 p.m. at the Highland Christian Center. This year, we will be joined by international opera star Angela Brown and straight from America's Got Talent, Danielle Damon. That's Monday, January 20th, from 11 to 6:30 p.m. at the Highland Christian Center at 7600 Northeast Gleason. Or listen live on KBOO Radio or view it on Open Signal Community Television.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Not So Supernova on Saturday, January 18th from 7 to 8:30 p.m. at the All Saints Episcopal Church in Portland. Not So Supernova is a full-length one-woman play exploring the edges of motherhood and marriage with humor and depth. Again, that's Not So Supernova on Saturday, January 18th from 7 to 8:30 p.m. at the All Saints Episcopal Church, 4033 Southeast Woodstock Boulevard in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KPFA in Berkeley, California, this is Flashpoints. My name is Mike Biggs. Today on the show, we rebroadcast Flashpoints interviews from the last two programs on the spiraling crisis with Iran. All this coming up next. Stay tuned.
I'm Dennis Bernstein. You're listening to Flashpoints on Pacifica Radio. Well, we are delighted to be joined again by John Pilger, award-winning filmmaker. There's many things to talk about. There are a couple of news items that we need to get to. John Pilger, welcome back to Flashpoints.
Thank you, Dennis. Very good to be back on the program.
Well, it's good to have you with us. Let's start with...